When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Craig just said to Shaq before we came on, it's going to be a fun show.
That's nice. Nice that you're
enjoying it. He said, I'm going to take a nap.
Yeah. That's nice. I'm glad you're enthusiastic. Ready to go.
International week.
Yes, brilliant.
And I do take, I think there was a tinge of sarcasm in that comment.
No, Craig. No, surely not. Meanwhile, we just talked about this on yesterday's show, and we'll kick off with it today. The links that Gareth Southgate could be the next Manchester United manager. This is a story that won't go away. And this is a man, of course, when you take a look at his domestic record, it's not something that screams big-time manager for the sort of aspirations that Manchester United have. Of course, he's done exceptionally well with England, but got relegated with Borough back in the day. Let's go to the man who broke this story. Mark Ogden is with us alongside Frank Leboeuf. Oggy, why?
Well, I suppose there's three managers that Man United would desperately love to have. Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola and Carlo Ancelotti. And they can't get any of them, let's be honest. They are completely out of reach. So beyond that, the list of candidates is, there's no ideal outstanding candidate. You know, that Roberto De Zerbi is a guy that they would look at, but, you know, he's had a few issues at Brighton recently. He's challenging the owner. I hear that he really fancies the Liverpool job. You've got Julian Nagelsmann, didn't do so well at Bayern Munich. You've got Thomas Tuchel, a bit too abrasive for the owner. So when you go through every candidate that's out there, they've all got flaws. Now, Gareth Southgate also has his flaws. You know, he's a guy that you'd say is maybe too cautious, too negative at the very sharp end of a tournament. Is he the guy that's going to win you a Champions League or a Premier League? Who knows? But he's very close to Dan Ashworth, who's going to be the director of football at United next season. He's got a long-standing relationship with Dave Brailsford, who is basically Jim Ratcliffe's man at Man United, who's running everything at Old Trafford. And they want somebody they know they can trust, who can get the job done in terms of make United function properly again. He's got a good record of developing a harmonious squad, as we've seen with England. Because the one thing in Southgate's credit is, when he took that England job, it was a mess. England was an absolute mess in the sense that nobody wanted to kind of back the team, nobody wanted to watch the team, that a lot of the players weren't interested in being around the squad. But he changed all that, got them to a World Cup semi-final, a Euros final. Yes, he's fallen short. When I did this story maybe last month, the reaction from United fans was so negative. It was like Rafa Benitez going to Everton. It was one of these stories that you just think, it's just never going to fly. But Sir Jim Ratcliffe, Dave Brailsford, they're very set in the ways. They know what they want. And for them, Gareth Southgate is a guy that ticks a lot of the boxes. No manager out there ticks all the boxes. No manager that can get ticks all the boxes. Gareth Southgate is a guy that they think that can take United where they want to go. I'm yet to be convinced, but that's the logic that I've been told that they see.
Who would you choose, Craig? Ten Hag or Southgate?
Oh. It's dancing with the devil there, aren't you, really? I mean, look, I think Southgate's a difficult sell to a club Man United size. And we can't deny the job he's done with England thus far, and we can go back to Augie's point and debate whether he's been a little bit overcautious at times, and we can go back to the Croatia semi-final where they were getting overrun in the midfield. He did nothing about it. So there are negatives out there, but there are positives. One of the things with international football is you're dealt a hand, right? You can't really change it too much. Mm-hmm. And there has been an element of good timing, I think, as well, because some of the older guard were going. Then you've had the likes of Bukayo Saka coming through, Phil Foden coming through, Declan Rice coming through. And we were talking about guys who would be either on the world stage or close to being world class. And I think that has helped the scenario. Now, where he's done well, he's managed to get the Harry Maguires and others, he's managed to get performances out of them. But in terms of going in to manage a football club that size with a 25, 30-man playing squad to have to deal with recruitment. There's nothing in his CV that suggests. I could see him popping back out of the England job into mid-table Premier League. I wouldn't have a massive issue with that. But we're talking about a club here that, when you're spending $1.25 billion to invest into the club, and you're not even buying the club for that, surely you want to be up there with the elite teams. And I don't think Gareth Southgate takes them there.
So the answer to my question is Ten Hag?
The answer is neither.
Well, that wasn't an option. That's been one or the other.
There was a ghost manager in there.
Oh, really? What's his name? Casper? Shaq?
If you're asking me the same question, I'd take my chance with Gareth Southgate.
Would you?
I don't think Eric Ten Hag has done an awful lot.
He's just orchestrated one of the greatest FA Cup victories ever.
Okay, one swallow doesn't make a summer. I think unless Manchester United are able to build on that and show that they truly are progressing, not what Ten Hag has been trying to sell us on progress, I'm not sure that I continue. And while I understand the concern around Gareth Southgate, I think it's a little unfair to draw the Middlesbrough. That was 15 years ago. And international football, just by its nature, is a lot different from club football. Though I admit, I do understand the concern. But if I had to choose one of the two this summer, and the rest of the season plays out as we've kind of seen the last couple of months, I would go with Gareth Southgate.
Mark, how much has the result at the weekend changed the narrative, if at all, around Ten Hag?
Well, it's changed the narrative, I guess, amongst the supporters and amongst us guys that are talking about it. But I think within the club, they realise that, you know, the issues that they have concerns about Eric Ten Hag revolve around personnel, tactics, results, the players he's signed in the transfer market. I mean, look, at the weekend, Anthony scored a great goal and got United back into the game. One of Ten Hag's signings, but that's all he's done since he signed for United. So you can't really say that he's had a success with Anthony. Now, I think with Ten Hag, he knows that unless he gets United into the Champions League and wins the FA Cup, he's really struggling. And I think even if he does that, and I don't think he will, even if he does that, I still think it's going to be difficult for him to stay because he's not convinced the people that are going to run the club. And every club that has a new owner, pretty much within 6 months, they change the manager. It's just what happens. It's just, you know, they find somebody that fits their remit and they go with that. And I think another significant point as well with Southgate is that Eric Ten Hag is going to cost between maybe 10 and 14 million pounds to pay off in terms of compensation, his coaches, you know, his backroom staff. Gareth Southgate will have no compensation because he's got basically 4 months left of his FA contract once the Euros finish. Now, that matters to Man United because at the moment they've got issues with FFP, with the new financial rules, and, you know, every million pound counts. And if they can save 10, 14, 15 million pounds that it would cost to get another coach, then that is a good deal. But equally, you can't really make an appointment of a manager for your club based on a position of weakness, and that position of weakness is the financial situation. But, you know, Eric Ten Hag has had a really, really bad season. The Liverpool game was just a kind of an outlier in terms of what he's done. So I don't think you can base his future on what happened in quite a lucky win against Liverpool.
Oh. Take Postecoglou over both of them. I don't understand why he's not in the talk for these things more. Is it because he managed in Australia? Is it because he managed in Japan? Is it because he managed in Scotland? Where, you can just turn up and win. And yeah, it's not a good week to be talking about him, I suppose, because they got walloped by Fulham. And Villa have had a downturn as well with a very good manager, and Unai Emery. But I'd have Postecoglou over either of those two.
Right.
100%.
Is he a ghost manager? Is Postecoglou a ghost?
He's quite a big ghost. He's difficult to miss, isn't he?
You know, I agree with the De Zerbi. Roberto De Zerbi at the moment has to find his mojo again. And that's a problem. And I do think there are other managers out there, but, you know, if you're saying to me Southgate or Postecoglou, I'm taking Postecoglou. In fact, you're not getting Zinedine Zidane, so you might as well scrub him off that list, right? Ruben Amorim. He's been talked with a lot of clubs recently.
Yes.
Sporting coach. Youngish guy. But I'm still taking the Tottenham manager over most of them. And I really am.
But then, obviously, you've got the situation, I suppose, Mark, with compensation. You could throw Unai Emery in that conversation as well. That surely Manchester United, the club of the financial standing that they have, they could go in there and they could go big on a manager like that.
Well, they can't because these new rules that we haven't got long enough to kind of get into the intricacies of what makes them complicated. But even clubs like Man United, like Arsenal, they're struggling to comply with FFP and PSR this summer because of their spend in the last 18 months, 2 years. So United are really kind of up against it. They've got a ground to pay for, either to rebuild or to build a new one. They've got a massive debt, which they confirmed last week, of £773 million, which has to be serviced every year. So United have got a lot of financial restrictions, a lot of problems at the moment financially. So they can't just throw money around on compensation for coaches, especially if they're paying one up to go. Can they afford to pay the same sort of money to an Ange Postecoglou, who, you know, is a name that I've heard on the fringes, but not really a serious name? And I suppose it's because maybe they don't think they can get him out of Tottenham. It's the old Daniel Levy thing again, isn't it? You know, how much would it cost to get Postecoglou out of Tottenham? Quite a lot of money. So they have to do things sensibly. And they've said right from the outset that they spent about 6 months doing an audit of Man United's recent recruitment, how much they've wasted on players. The last thing they want to do, having done that, is make their first big decision to throw loads of money away again on compensation, because it's just a waste of money. So United have to find a way to bridge that gap. And if they think that's Gareth Southgate, you know, it's a bold choice. It would be an interesting move, and I think they'd have a PR battle to win. But, you know, one thing is, we have to think with Southgate, if the likes of Harry Kane and even Jude Bellingham 2 or 3 years down the line want to come back to England, then Gareth Southgate as your manager gives United a really good chance to get those players, certainly Harry Kane. So maybe that's part of the thinking, that he's got a great, you know, rapport with the England squad. He might get more out of Rashford. He might get more out of Maguire and save United a fortune on a new centre-half. So there are lots of elements of this that it does make sense. But overall, to manage Man United, I think you need to be a big personality. You need to be a guy that can walk in that stadium like Eric Cantona did, like Alex Ferguson did, and think, well, you know, this is my scene, this is my stage. And I'm not quite sure that's Gareth Southgate, but I don't see any of the candidates out there that would do that anyway. I think, they have to find a candidate that ticks as many boxes as possible, because nobody ticks all the boxes.
Of course, the weekend very much a highlight for Manchester United. Unfortunately for fans of the club, there's been plenty of lowlights as well. Bruno Fernandes has been struggling so far this season, and we talked about those struggles yesterday. In the interview, he was also asked about the intensity that he shows on the pitch. Of course, a lot of arm waving, and some people, including like Sir Roy Keane, question whether or not he should be the captain of Manchester United. On being demanding and intense, it says this often conveys the image of bad temper, because it comes from the way we experience the game, from how we are so intense, and intense players are difficult to understand. There's a lot of intense there, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the guys will know it. What it boils down to is he's frustrated by the players around him, that a lot of them aren't good enough, and he's frustrated that they're not playing to the level that he wants. He's frustrated at referees' decisions. He's a bit of a moaner, isn't he? Let's be honest. He moans at a lot of things. I mean, at the weekend when he was fouled, and it wasn't a foul really, he moans and complains. And you know, but I think it boils down to the fact that he's playing for a team, that a big club that he's underperforming. I think he thinks that, I won't say he's wasting his career at Man United, that'll be overstating it, but he's gone there now, and he's looking around his Portuguese teammates like Bernardo Silva, for instance, and Diogo Jota, who are playing at big clubs and winning trophies. And Bruno's probably thinking, you know, what am I doing here? Why am I surrounded by these players who are just not good enough? And it must be frustrating. And he's taking his frustrations out on everybody, referees, you know, opponents. But I just think it boils down to the fact that he's not content with the majority of the players that are around him.
Frankie's one of your favourite players.
Yeah, I've been quite critical about Bruno Fernandes. I recognise his talent, and I want to explain so that people from south of Europe, and I'm one of them, I was born in Marseille, you know, when we talk like Italian, we talk with the hands, and we express everything with our body. So he's kind of a player like that. When he wants to show a frustration, for example, he has to do it and show it with his hands. And it's not because he's becoming, worse than we think. He's just expressing himself. So I think he should calm down. I feel that on the field, he's never happy with the referee, with the opponents, but also the teammates. And he's annoying. At some point, it's getting annoying to see him every weekend, you know, complaining about everything.
Yeah, and to be fair, we've just seen some of the incidents here.
No, well, listen, you know where I stand in this. I think we have picked a terrible week to have this discussion.
Because of what happened at the weekend?
Manchester United have just come off one of the biggest wins they've had for I don't know how long against a fantastic team. One of the best quarterfinals that we have seen in many a year. Went all the way, almost to penalties. It was end to end. And you know, I think there's a time and a place. And I don't think it's now. You know, we know he's a frustrating player. We know he's not having the best of seasons. And we know he can get a bit indisciplined in his game. But he played his part. I mean, he worked hard and he didn't, blah, blah, blah. And for me, what I don't understand is why we're picking the bones out of a player in a week where his club have just had the biggest result that they could ever have had imagined, bearing in mind their circumstances.
I suppose because he's addressed this in the interview. The interview that he's given. And he's talking about this. No, but that's why it's not as if we've suddenly gone out of the air and gone, oh, let's talk about Bruno Fernandes today. It's reacting to the interview that he's given. But obviously, this is a man, as you say, who was playing on one leg for the last 30 minutes in extra time. And I think, obviously, a lot of fans are doing
it's all very moot. And when a team is winning, all these things are basically a moot point. Because at the end of the day, everything gets brushed over when you're getting results.
But what about the summer and the swallow?
Well, what about it?
What about that?
Listen, I understand exactly what Craig's saying, but then to Bruno Fernandes and doing this interview, it's a good time for him to do the interview because of that game. So he comes out and kind of opens up these discussion points. I don't think Bruno Fernandes is that good a captain. And to the criticism from players like Roy Keane, who was every bit as animated, who shouted at his teammates every bit as much as Bruno Fernandes did. And to Mark's point, Roy Keane had far better players around him. I'm not sure that's much of an excuse for Bruno Fernandes in this instance, because while we're talking about a lesser player, lesser Manchester United, I'm not sure that Bruno Fernandes gets into one of the Premier League's big boys. I'm not sure that he gets into City's starting 11 or Liverpool's or Arsenal's. So maybe that's just the level that he is right now. That's the level that where Manchester United are. I just feel that while he's animated, while he's critical, he doesn't pull the team together in the way that Roy Keane did, or certainly seemed to do. And that for me will be my complaint. I have no issue with the remonstrations. I just don't feel that the team kind of rallies around him in the way that previous Manchester United manager.
Well, he's not a captain. He's not. Look, this is a different sort of discussion and debate. He's not a captain, certainly not of Man United. But it's no discussion point for me that a player is throwing his arms around or a player is having a go at other players, because that's something that we would do every game. Absolutely every game. If somebody's not doing their job, they're getting a rollicking. If somebody's not doing what you want, they're getting told. So I have no problem with any of this. Look, he's not a captain of Man United or anybody else for that matter. He's not a leader, and that's not the player he is. But in terms of having a go at other players or throwing your arms around, show me players that don't get animated, and I'll show you players that don't care.
We'll wrap up Manchester United segment by asking where you are, Mark. What are you doing?
I'm in Budapest, so it's obviously, as we know, it's the playoffs this week for the Euros. So three teams are going to qualify next week. So I'm doing the Israel against Iceland game, because obviously it's a bigger picture with this one. Israel may qualify for the Euros, so it's a story that obviously will catch people's attention. So I'm watching the Israel Iceland game and seeing if they can get to a final next week against Ukraine or Bosnia.
Oh, my God, that'll drive the FC.com absolutely through the building, won't it?
That's it. Thank you very much, Mark. Much appreciated. Just a reminder, plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over there and subscribe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd's Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business?
Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's talk about Chelsea now, shall we? Of course, through to the semi-finals of the FA Cup after that victory against Leicester. But to find them in the Premier League table, you have to go all the way down to 11th. Even when they win, they somehow muck things up, as obviously they did at the weekend against Leicester. This is what a fan group has said about the frustrations within the supporters' groups at the moment. The feeling that the club has become a laughingstock, both on and off the pitch, is growing. Unless the situation improves, this seems likely to manifest itself in more targeted chanting, especially at televised games. Let's welcome in James Ollie. James, you were at Stamford Bridge for that game against Leicester. Can you just talk us through the atmosphere and what led to it?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I wrote in the piece I did from the game that if the atmosphere was almost like a referendum on Pochettino's future, there was conversation going on in the stands, and you know, reminiscent of other clubs, and thinking it goes on a lot at West Ham games around David Moyes. You can sort of hear when the team's not playing with any real conviction or any kind of quality, they just start talking amongst themselves, and they're sort of clearly thinking, are we on board with this? Are we not? And you know, Chelsea play in such snatches. They play in moments. They play in periods of the game where they make you believers for 10 minutes, and then they suddenly regress, and then there's a problem in the game and they concede a cheap goal, and obviously it was a comical own goal. Or they'll put a piece of good play together and they'll score, and then they'll win a penalty, and then Sterling will miss it, and you kind of don't really know what you're going to get next. And I think the Chelsea fans have had enough of the uncertainty, really. And what I think we're seeing, particularly with that statement as well, is there's such a vacuum at the top of the club now in terms of what is the direction. You know, we don't hear from Todd Bowley, we don't hear from Bernard Iqbali and Clear Lake Capital. It's only Pochettino who's really out there trying to make sense of a lot of decisions that, let's be honest, have been taken either before he came in or they're still made above him now. And I think that lack of clarity and that lack of understanding of what is the bigger picture, yes, we've spent this money, but where are we going, is leading to this space that's being filled with a lot of this negativity. And because the team are not playing with that clarity either, I think this is a fan base that is looking at a team and supported a club for 20-odd years that knew if things were not going well, the manager would be changed, ruthless decisions would be made, and that team, if it wasn't at the top, wouldn't be far away with those changes. Unfortunately, now they have no sort of certainty about what is coming next, what is, you know, even from minute to minute, even within the games, let alone the bigger picture about where they're going as a club going forward.
And now, how audible was the booing that you heard of Sterling?
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, it reached a real nadir when he took that free kick in the second half that, you know, wasn't out of place at Twickenham. You know, because it was so bad that before the ball had really reached the ground or hit the back of the stand as it had done then, there were quite loud boos and people calling, literally chanting, "Get him off, get him off." And then when Pochettino took the decision to bring on Chukwuemeka, but he brought off Mudryk instead of Sterling, more chance of "you don't know what you're doing," really turning on Pochettino there. And then eventually, yeah, this is the free kick. So, I mean, that is just an abomination. I mean, I've not played the game, but that is an abomination, isn't it? Let's be honest. A really, really bad. Just technically, you can't even begin to defend that. But by the time Sterling came off, it almost felt a bit of a relief for everyone, really, that he was having such a nightmare afternoon. Yes, he had the assist for the second goal. Again, a good moment, but really in a wider collective malaise, it was lost in everything else. And yeah, it's really toxic there at the moment. And you can just feel, and I think the players know it. I think it's why when they're 2-0 up in that game, you know, they look so fragile. The minute something goes against them, they concede, and then it's 2-2, and suddenly they're on the back foot, and the game becomes a kind of basketball match and could go either way. There's not that sense of control, of sort of inner calm and composure that would enable them to have the game management to get them through these situations. And it does really feel like it's on a knife edge for Pochettino at the moment.
And all these negativities, to James's point there, are making things much more unstable for the manager, because as we've discussed many times and we've all seen it, when a supporters turn in big numbers, obviously we've talked about Raheem Sterling getting it, and that's most of us think it was pretty unacceptable, because players have bad days at the office. He's not said he doesn't want to play for the club, doesn't want to be at the club, but he certainly did not have a particularly good game. But when these large groups of supporters turn, it starts to resonate, you would think, with investors and ownership. And they're only going to turn one way. They're only ever going to turn one way. And the only thing that takes it away, whether the club has been run properly or not, or whether the fans have been liaised with properly and the communication is not the best, that kind of goes away somewhat if you're getting results. Mm-hmm. But when you put... And they've had some good results, not many, but some. Carabao Cup final. FA Cup semi-final now, where unfortunately for them, they've got Man City. But if this continues and gets worse, then Todd Bowley and all those cohorts that are at Stamford Bridge, they're going to start feeling the ire of these supporters. And then it's going to fall back on one head, yep, and one head only. And that's Pochettino.
Here's the issue with everything at Chelsea for me. And I understand the fans' frustrations. And the fans are going to take it out on the players and the manager, because they're the ones on the pitch and on the sidelines on match days. But I do not believe you can consistently put out a good product on the park when there is, and to use James's term, when there's this vacuum of leadership at the top. And that's what you've seen ever since Todd Bowley and clearly Capital have taken over. The first year, Bowley was seeing a lot, but oftentimes contradicting himself.
The All-Star game, wasn't it?
It made Chelsea a laughing stock because of what he's seeing. And now he's gone the 180 degrees the other way and not saying anything. And that's leaving Pochettino in a really awful position, because he's getting no help from the top. It's translating into results at the bottom. And he now somehow has to fill that void. And he can't. Those are three very good managers that we're looking at there. Under Todd Bowley and his leadership at Chelsea, who have all struggled. And there's one consistent, and that's the ownership. And for me, they have to bear the brunt of the blame.
And you know, if you remember back, I actually questioned the mindset and thought process of him taking this job. I did. I thought, yeah, I mean, it's big money. It's back into elite level management. It's the Premier League, all that sort of stuff. But then you looked at it from the outside and you looked at the scattergun approach that was there, the undermining of Graham Potter, the decision-making that was made left, right and centre, that just seemed to be... everything was sort of off the cuff and impulsive. And you just wondered at the mindset of him thinking that he could come in, and I suppose every manager does, and they think, oh, I can make the difference. thus far, he hasn't really. And I think you now look at some of the managers that are leaving or being fired, and it might have been better off for him to sit back, take stock, and bide his time. But he threw himself back in, knew what he was getting himself into, because he had a bit of time to before he went into the hot seat when he knew he was getting it. And he's suffering the same fate as the manager that was before him.
Frank, what do you make of everything going around your former club at the moment?
It's hard to always pick, you know, the last, but I...
Frank's waited all this time to talk, and then
his internet froze.
His internet's frozen. Frank, let's try again.
Yeah. Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Do you hear me now? Yeah. Okay. I understand the fans, and I always said, you know, the frustration comes from the fact that they're getting impatient, and it's only fair. And we say the club is Chelsea. Chelsea cannot wait 2, 3, 4 years to settle down and to wait for the inexperienced players to get better. So when they see on top of it the experienced player like Sterling not doing well, they get angry. And on top of it, they cannot reach the top. I mean, the fans cannot yell at Mr. Boehly and his colleague. So they go for a lower level. So they go to Pochettino and they go to the players now. But they want to show their frustration and their rage against the board who brought the club there. Don't forget that Chelsea, before Zola, Di Matteo, Vialli, Mark Hughes signed, and Craig Bailey, the club didn't win for more than 20 years, didn't win anything. So they don't want to go back to that generation who has been frustrated for two decades. So they want to warn the club, they cannot reach them, so they hit on who they can see. Pochettino first, where I think it's not fair, even if, as Craig said, you know, he knew what could happen to him, but I think it's not fair because he already had the problem, and the players now. So it's an unbearable problem, because it's not going to be resolved next year, not even the year after, because of the player that they have.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? You're looking for any sort of light at the end of the tunnel. It's difficult to sell that to Chelsea fans, James.
Yeah, and, you know, they've backed themselves into a corner with financial fair play because of the way that they've spent their money and the underperformance of the team. So it's not as if they can just buy their way out of this. I mean, there's also an argument that they might not even be able to afford to sack Pochettino and his coaching staff because of the money that will cost. He's only got a year left. He only ever signed a 2-year contract, but you're still talking about maybe, I don't know the exact numbers, but you'd be talking 10, maybe 15 million when you bring in the backroom staff as well to sack all of them. And that is money that they don't have. They're going to have to sell players this summer and probably before June the 30th to try and make sure that they comply with the PSR rules, the FFP rules, to make sure they're not in breach and they face a fine or maybe a points deduction. So it's not a case of Chelsea in the past where maybe they've underperformed under the old regime and the Abramovich regime and they've gone, right, here's the checkbook, let's go and spend. They can't. They've done it. They've already done it. They've spent the big money. And look, the problem they've got, I think, is they've changed everything at that club. They've changed, obviously, the ownership. They've changed the hierarchy. They've changed the staff. They've changed the manager. They've changed almost the entire playing squad. But they haven't changed the fans. And this is where this comes back to. The fans are used to this team winning. And if they don't win, it's rectified quickly. They never heard from the past owner. Abramovich barely did an interview, I think, in 20-odd years of running that club. But they knew what would happen. If a manager underperformed, if that squad had holes that needed filling, they would fill it, they would change the manager, and they would get back to the top of the game and be competing for the major prizes. The problem they've got, Chelsea, these days, is there's so many voices behind the scenes. There's co-owners, there's co-sporting directors. They've just hired a new loans manager. They've got analytics teams. They've got scouts. They've got all these people feeding into it. Pochettino is another voice throwing in, and these decisions are being made in this kind of haphazard way. And because they've already spent the money, and because Todd Boehly and Ben Adegbali are not coming out publicly and speaking and saying, OK, look, we've spent a lot, but this is the vision. This is where we're trying to get to. We understand Pochettino. We support him. We understand the short-term problems, but this is where we're going as a long-term plan. That is creating an absolute malaise that is leaving these fans to think, well, we don't really know what our club is anymore. Because when the owner was silent before, we still knew what we were going to get. And they go through the gates at Stamford Bridge every week, and they do not know from one week to the next what that team is going to produce. It's consistent only in its inconsistency. And as Craig was saying earlier, you know, it will eventually come back to Pochettino because they've exacerbated that pressure on the manager by dishing out 6, 7, 8, 9 year contracts to these players. So it's not as if, you know, if you're a player sat there, Craig, if you're a player sat there on a 7 year deal, And the club say, well, actually, we might think about moving you on next summer. You're going to go to any prospective club and say, well, I want a 6 year contract. You're not going to give up 6 years money, are you? You'd never do it, Frank. You know, you guys have all played the game. You would not give up 6 years money easily, having been given that 6, 7, 8 year contract in the first place. It's going to make it so much harder to move these players on. So if you sack the manager, whatever new manager comes in, he's going to have to deal with this same group of players. And then it comes back to, well, was the recruitment good enough? Are these players actually good enough to go and win the league, to go and win the Champions League, which is ultimately where they see them being?
I have an idea for the fans. You know, if they want to be listened by the board, don't go to Stamford Bridge anymore. Don't go for 1, 2, 3 games. Don't go. And you will see, something's going to happen. When you're going to face empty stands, you know, and the media is going to talk about it, it's going to be kind of a riot. The silence can be very loud sometimes. And if you don't show up, if you're all the fans, all the Chelsea crazy fans, they don't show up, the problem is going to be showed to the world. And Bolly and the others, they will have to talk. They will have to talk. It would be compulsory.
Wow. Do you remember Chelsea legend Frank Leboeuf says don't go to Stamford Bridge?
Well, if you sign a 7 or 8 year contract and a 7 year and they try and get you out and they try to force you and play all these games, which I'm not suggesting they're doing, but it has happened, you're not going to get that somewhere else because nobody else is stupid enough. But then you're looking at asking Chelsea to pay 2 or 3 years of your contract and it becomes a game of chess.
Everything is bad for Chelsea at the end of every story.
Well, you go back to Frankie de Jong at Barcelona. We know Barcelona were in, had their, and still are having financial problems. But do you remember they really tried to force him out to get money so they could move in a different direction? And Frankie de Jong, international footballer, said no. No. Yeah, and by the way, they belittled him in the media, on the radio, on the TV, in front of the fans. The fans would be turning up at the training ground, they'd be booing. And Frankie de Jong said, I am not going to bow to this pressure. And that's what these Chelsea players will do. They'll try and put pressure on them, possibly some of them that they've realised they've made mistakes on, and they may try and get them out. But whether we agree or not, once that player signs the contract, it is not his problem. Right? And as long as he's keeping himself professional, as long as he's making himself available, and as long as he's doing his best, it is his choice if he wants to see that contract out. So it seems to me, and we know this has happened anyway, they've just swanned in here when they did, this ownership, Todd Bowley and all the investors, the cohorts, Clear Lake Capital, all these people, and went, we know what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it. And they have made a complete balls up of it thus far.
James, thank you very much. I feel that was one of your more optimistic appearances on the show. What does international break have in store for you?
Don't get me on to talk about a London team that's won Premier Leagues at the bottom half of the table. I'm with England, so I'm England Brazil and then England Belgium. So two big games for Gareth Southgate.
Lovely. Thank you very much, James, as always. Just a reminder, if you want more from our journalists, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That's available to listen to now. Jürgen Klinsmann will be joining us on the next edition of ESPN FC and get his thoughts on Spurs' season so far.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Right, none of you were here yesterday, so let's address it, shall we? This is what Howard Webb had to say about the Doku Challenge on McAllister. You see something that's pretty subjective and therefore VAR stays out of it. And the feedback we have from people within the game is that this is a pretty subjective situation and it splits opinion. Would you like to say anything?
I'd like to get Howard Webb. Howard Webb, quite some time ago, came on this show.
Yes. Yeah, he did.
When he was head of MLS referees.
Mm-hmm. It was very nice.
I think he only came on once.
Yes, he did.
Don't think he ever... I don't know if he was asked to come back or whether he wouldn't have wanted to come back. Because he goes on these... I don't even know what network it is, but he goes on some network in the UK and comes up with this utter garbage, nonsense, and yet is barely challenged. If he came on here, he would be getting... He'd be getting wiped across this floor with this nonsense. But yet we have these meek presenters and pundits in the UK. Oh, you're right, yeah, yeah. And I want to know who the independent panellists are.
Oh, yeah, because there's three players, isn't it, on the five panel.
Right. Seriously. Howard, it's split.
It's a joke.
It's not split. It's not split, Howard. The only thing split is your brain, right? It's a penalty, right? Sorry,
carry on.
Frank, would you like to add anything?
No, it's just a joke, and I totally agree with Craig Burley. I will face Howard Webb. I'll say, Howard, can you stop lying? Can you stop pretending? You know, you face it. Just be honest. Just face it. That was
there
a penalty.
Go. There we are. Just be honest. Frank?
Listen, it's a penalty. I don't understand the gymnastics to try and explain away what was a error by the referee on the
Michael
day, certainly by Michael Oliver and the VAR on the day. I can't explain.
This must be some of the most dullest TV you've ever seen,
mate. On this show.
Well, it's up there. Howard Webb going on monotone, trying to suggest that these incidents basically didn't happen. You didn't see it. It never happened.
There we go.
So what's what are we doing here?
Yeah, this title race. Do you want to say who's going to win the title?
Howard Webb.
Howard Webb is going to win the title.
He's in fourth, but he's
beautiful.
Coming.
Yeah, beautiful. Frank, we'll say thank you very much. Much appreciated. Frank will be back with us for Extra Time. As always, you can check out Extra Time over on our YouTube channel where we stay late.
Oh, it seems to me that this combination of the that tie right. Is getting a good outing.
It is. He does like that. Gab was a special guest, surprise guest on Extra Time yesterday. He very much enjoyed that role. Shaq, I want to talk to you one last thing that we talked about yesterday. Of course, Thibaut Courtois out for the rest of the season. Obviously a massive blow for Real Madrid. From what you've seen from Lunin, is he good enough to step in these massive games against Manchester City?
Short answer is no. Listen, Thibaut Courtois, in my opinion, was the best in the world before he got injured. And anybody trying to fill that void, I'm sorry, you're you're chasing your tail on that one. And while Lunin is an incredible number two...
You like Lunin? Do you remember?
I do.
We were in California together.
Yeah. I was just... I thought he was a really good goalkeeper. And I stand by that.
So what was California got to do with you thinking he's a really...
Because Real Madrid were training and he went down with the goalkeepers and he goes, oh, I like this Lunin chap.
Yeah, he's a good goalkeeper. He's just not Thibaut Courtois. But saying that, Manchester City also have their issues, their goalkeeping issues. But if you want to draw comparisons to last year, Courtois played.
Oh, yes. Goalkeeper stats, Craig.
Oh, there you go. That's all because of what I told Lunin in California.
Exactly.
That's what it come down to.
Courtois was
between his sticks last year. Manchester City made easy work of Real Madrid over two legs. I don't see why it's going to be that different this time around.
If I had those stats, I'd kick those stats all the way to California.
Oh, lovely. We had a lovely time. Well,
did
no, I'm talking about the stats.
Till the end.
Can there's a caveat?
Abrupt end.
The end
came to
a little bit.
Came to a premature end.
Was it just Lunin? No, I'm not going to say it. There's a caveat to that, though. That's the least of their problems against Man City.
Okay.
Would you not say?
I think...
The defensive issues.
Yes, I think...
I think there is much more to worry about than the fact that, you know, and...
Yeah.
I thought he was out for the goal for the duration of the season anyway. Thibaut Courtois.
You may have noticed it is International Week, so you've got to wait a couple of weeks until the return of La Liga on ESPN+. It'll be coming to you at the end of the month for Barcelona. They're in action against Las Palmas in a big game for Real Madrid as they take on Athletic Club at the Santiago Bernabeu. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. As promised, Frank will be with us.
Well, it was pretty painless, wasn't it?
That's all right, yeah. God.
Yeah, it's been... Yeah.
We survived. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Craig and Shaka here in the studio. Frank LaBeouf joins us as well.
What day was it? Monday. Mario didn't even manage to put a full shift in.
No.
He got the hook.
Yes, Mario.
He got subbed off, or he subbed himself off.
Yeah, Ian obviously was out already.
Yeah, how is...
I haven't heard. Did you hear about
it? You heard about this?
Sure.
So Ian couldn't do Monday's show because he was playing golf and he swung the club and a big bit of mud went in his eye.
Oh. And he couldn't get it out.
And he couldn't get it out, so he didn't want to go on the show with something in his eye.
And apparently that meant he couldn't talk. I'd have liked to have seen him with a patch over his eye.
Oh, like a pirate.
Yeah.
You just couldn't... We couldn't do the show if he was wearing a pirate.
Oh, well, but he... So he
we're hearing he's okay now. The dirt is out of his eye.
Well, you good? Yeah. You all good?
So he's all right.
So he couldn't get the dirt out of his eye. And so we got the super sub Robbo off the bench.
Yeah. And then Mario's internet.
Mario was in. His internet went for a...
Yes. Yep.
Forever.
That was it.
Wasn't Mario in the LA studio, though?
No.
That wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
He's been having some issues with his internet as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think this is interesting to me.
He got Don round.
How did it feel when you got your first call up to the national team, Shaka? Of course, Mainoo called up, wasn't he?
Oh. It's great, actually.
How did you find out?
I was at University States and I got my first call up.
Whoa.
And my dad told me.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
My dad called me in and told me about it.
Oh, big man around campus, I'm after that.
Well, you know me. I had a little bit of a strut going on.
Swanning
did
around.
You?
Oh, I had an absolute strut going
big
on.
Big strut, goalkeeper gloves all the time.
Didn't play. But I was all right. I got called up.
What was it like that first time? Obviously, big names that you'd always admired.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so this would have been 1990 and Trinidad Tobago failed to qualify... or 91, we just somebody last hurdle in 89, and all these players who I thought were the best thing I'd ever seen in the squad, and I'm coming off university and training with them is incredible. I still, even when I see these guys, I'm still in awe of a lot of them.
Oh, that's a nice story, Craig.
What was your study at university?
Mechanical engineering, Craig. Mm.
And what does that sort of entail?
Mechanical stuff.
And what?
An engineer.
Engines.
So you're a mechanic?
I'm a mechanical engineer.
What's wrong?
Can you expand on this? What's a mechanical engineer?
Well, it's someone who builds engines.
He couldn't build an engine.
That's because he went off. He went strutting off to
the end. He built half of it and then he'd leave. go on freaking vacation. Why did you get all negative when you came?
Well, because that was a really nice story from Shaka.
Lots of really nice stories.
Right, tell us about your first call-up.
I can't remember.
Oh, Craig, you serious? You must remember, surely. It's such a momentous occasion. That's right, don't force it then. Frank,
I can't remember.
Frank, I think if you told us before, everybody hated the fact that you got called up.
Well, I was called just before going to a game in Bastia, and it was in the afternoon, and I remember a journalist called me, and I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't expecting it, and I opened the switch on the teletext, the TV, and I saw on the teletext my name. So I was very surprised and happy. So he came from dream to nightmare the day after when I opened the L'Equipe newspaper, where I discovered that I had nothing to do with the national team, in the national team, according to one journalist who wasn't told the day before that I was about to be called, and he hammered me on half a page and saying that I had nothing to do with that. But I was okay, you know. I stayed seven years, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
See,
who's laughing now?
Yes. He's got a PhD. What you got?
Shaka, you've got a PhD as well, haven't you?
I've got a master's degree and an honorary doctorate.
Yeah, there you are. Take that.
Wow.
Take that, Burley.
No, that just shows you what you can do when you got a bit of money and you can buy it. No way he's earned those.
Wow.
He's bought them.
No. I think that's unfair.
Mechanical engineer in my backside. Nothing that he could engineer.
Right.
And he's not a mechanic.
Oh dear, Shaq. What if he does? It's kicking a lot of.
Oh, nonsense. Seriously, it's all nonsense.
Pundits are saying Euro 2024 is Southgate's Waterloo. If you were in charge of the English side, what would your setup be and why would be and who would be in your starting 11?
I feel you're the best person to answer this, Dan. You're the England punter.
Proper punter he is.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Me, Craig and Frank.
Well, you've got to make sure you have Bellingham in the side, Foden, Declan Rice, Harry Kane and Saka. I think that has to be your five, isn't it?
OK.
And then what do you do with that holding midfield role? He loves Jordan Henderson, we know that, but come on.
Right, here's
So who would you play in holding midfield?
Nah. I don't know. Like, is Maynou too inexperienced? Would you have someone like that to play in...
We've got somebody in holding midfield called Declan Rice. The trouble is, one of the criticisms of Southgate is two conservatives, and he's put two players in there, i.e. Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips. Now, it won't be Calvin Phillips at the moment because he's not playing well, but a lot of people are saying England have been too conservative because they had two guys in there that could do the dip. That's the dip.
Yeah, and a double pivot.
And will he have the gumption? That word?
Gumption.
Is that a Scottish word or is that...
No, gumption is a word.
Very universally used.
Yes.
Mechanical engineers use it. Will he have the gumption to actually play?
I think Craig's got an inferior complex.
I've not got an inferior complex. You know why? I left school when I was 15. I don't give a stuff.
Also, you should congratulate Shaka.
He didn't do it.
He said to it. And they don't just hand out.
He did.
Masters.
He bought it.
Oh, wow.
I've seen him do it.
You've seen him do it?
Yeah. What? In the car park here.
There's Shaka again behind the tree. buying his masters.
He sells them to people. Kobe Mino, that's a good example. Will he give this young man his head? Will he make the squad? Will he make the team even if he continues to play the way that he does? Or will Southgate say, we're ready for this, you know, might make mistakes?
It'd be interesting to see.
And there's other side of the coin. We don't care.
Other side of the coin. It's been a while since we've heard that one. Yep. But it's coupled with we don't care, which we hear a lot of. So, for
that sort of terminology, what do you use? When I say the other side of the coin, what do you use?
I don't know. I have a grand lexicon.
On the other hand,
I have a grand lexicon of vocabulary, so I can't just pick on one.
You're not exactly a wordsmith.
Well, I think more than.
I mean,
he's coming back again.
More of a mechanical engineer.
He is. I know. I've got a degree in journalism. Is Southgate's friendship...
You got a degree in journalism and you end up here.
I know. What a moment.
Oh, my God.
Frank, is Southgate's friendship with players holding England back?
In a year when no Ajax players were selected for the Dutch national team, he selects Jordan Henderson.
Well, you know, with all due respect, you know, I think when you decide to go to a lower league, you have to accept the fact that the coach, even if he's a friend of yours, doesn't call you. And I think Southgate should have taken the possibility of changing something and maybe not thinking of Henderson is my friend or whatever he can be or has been a fantastic player. But he's not playing at the top level right now. So I have other expectations and I would bring somebody else. So I think it's not good to be too friendly with your players because you are above them. The hierarchy has to be respected and you are the image of your country in that matter. And you have to make sure you have to have a good relationship with the players, but you have to be competitive and to be at the top.
Okay, that's a lot of England talk. Right.
I don't think Southgate is too friendly.
Okay.
I think you could say he's maybe too loyal.
Right.
That's a difference.
That's a different one.
But what would make me worry, back to the other question briefly, about the cautious, is that Kobe Mainoo wasn't in the initial squad.
No.
And Jordan Henderson was.
Yes.
Now, and even before this great game he had in the FA Cup quarter-final against Liverpool, which he did, I still felt he should have been in the squad before that.
Yeah.
Because he'd shown enough and it was time to have a look at some young...
Yes, most definitely.
But he initially went the very safe route.
That you already know what you're getting, kind of, there, in that situation.
Exactly.
Craig, do you think Barca should sign both Jowls permanently?
No. Cancelo and Felix?
Yes.
No. I mean, yeah, they're playing a little better at the moment, but João Cancelo has been left out of the team there at times.
Yes.
And he's shown his weakness, and Xavi's seen his weakness for defending. And the other one, I would sign him if I was getting him for nothing.
Right.
Potentially as a squad player. But they're not going to get him for nothing, João Felix. Atleti are going to want a big chunk of that signing fee back. And it's not...
It'd be a lovely first day back for Felix, wouldn't it?
What?
Atleti.
Oh.
Really...
Hey, Diego, I'm here.
For Frank, what do you think of the reports that Giroud could come to LAFC in the summer? Will you be showing him around the city if he signs?
Yes, I would love to, but you have already Hugo Lloris playing for LAFC,
yes.
So I don't know if he's going to stay or not. You have also another player who used to play for Saint-Etienne, I forgot his name, the midfielder. I think he would be more than welcome. And if I'm around, you know, I would love to show him around. Yeah, for sure. But I think it's a very good idea for Olivier Giroud, if he's at the end of his contract with Milan, to go there and bring his experience, because he's a very professional player like Hugo Lloris is, and bring some experience to the American players. Will be very useful.
For Shaka, who's been the best keeper in the Premier League this season?
Ooh, it's a really good question, you know. I would have said Edison, but well, Edison, he's only missed one game through injury so far.
Oh, really?
He only just got injured against Liverpool.
Yeah, but has he had a standout season?
Who has?
Well, that's the question.
Edison's had the most standout season.
Most standout of seasons. You would go Edison?
I'd
feels like a, just an easy choice, you mean?
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, good. For Craig, oh, God.
Oh, God. I don't even know the question, and I'm going, oh, God.
Really appreciated the answer you gave the other day about being a commentator. Watching
not
the United,
back over it.
Watching the United-Liverpool game, I noted how you would be quiet for what felt like as long as a minute sometimes. Is this a tactic to let the game flow? It was amazing. Oh, come on.
I have to tell you, right? Yeah, I know. Goodness gracious, I don't pick the questions.
Nor do I. I would have picked that one.
You just send them in.
Yeah. I have my thoughts on.
You do.
I don't know. I don't have that kind of time. By the way, that's not the question I sent.
If there was a PhD in keeping quiet and letting the game flow, would you accept it?
Listen. If there was a PhD in being able to mute some of these Muppets that waffle on, I'd take that. But yeah, everybody's different.
Start, bench, sell, the best Premier League front threes. Goodness me. Right, so I'm going to go with you because you'll concentrate. Rooney, Tevez, Ronaldo. Henri, Bergkamp, Pires. No. Salah, Mane, Firmino.
Oh, man.
Come on, mechanical engineer.
Harry Burkamp. Perez.
What?
Yeah, that's not the good spelling, but whatever.
I said Henri. Oh, man, start bench. So. Now, I'm going to go. I'm going to start Rooney, Tevez, Ronaldo. I am going to bench Henri Burkamp, Perez. I'm saying that with no real conviction.
No, not at all.
No.
So Salah, Mane, Firmino, gone?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay, Frank?
I'm going to go to Henri Burkamp and Perez with a good spelling. It's an S at the end. He's Portuguese. His origins are Portuguese. And after I go to Rooney, Tevez, Ronaldo, and yes, the last that would be Salah, Mane, Firmino. That's crazy to say that, but we have to give an answer.
What do you say?
He's letting the show breathe a little bit.
Oh, yeah, he's letting it breathe for a minute now. it's great for the podcast.
The atmosphere. I just let the atmosphere.
Right. What would you have for those three? Come on.
Well, you never came to me.
I did.
You didn't. You went to him, you said, because he's concentrating.
Yeah, hurry up, it's late.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shut up.
Right, come on then, get on with it.
What? I'm refusing to answer the question.
Wow.
Because you know why? There's too much talking here.
We need
dead air.
Well, that's a talk. That's a talking show.
It was amazing.
Tell you what. Here, hold on. Get me a PhD.
Oh, dear, mate.
Mechanical engineer.
Why are you on so many singles?
Hold on, what's wrong with singles,
Craig? No, I just wondered why.
Craig.
What do you want to say? I've got two singles, isn't it?
Craig.
What's wrong with singles?
Who was the most underrated teammate you played with internationally with Scotland? Well, that's a different turn now.
I don't understand what's wrong with singles.
I think we just move on, Craig. It's fine, right? Don't know why you're doing that.
I mean, I lost a bunch in Alabama golf.
Right, nobody cares. Right, come on. Most underrated teammate.
For who?
Scotland.
Scotland. If you're getting in the national
Duffy.
Team, you're not underrated, are you? What do you say?
Duffy. I think he's just making up names.
Goffy, the
centre back.
Richard Goff.
Yeah, Richard Goff.
Goffy. Yeah, he was before me, Goffy. Most underrated. Maybe Colin Calderwood, Tottenham.
Finally, with a club named from a burrito restaurant winning in the USOC last night, that's the US Open Cup, I believe. What's your all-time favourite cup upset?
What, in the AOC?
No, in the world.
I'm not a great purveyor of the AOC, I have
no,
to say.
No, the USOC.
I've never watched a game in my life.
No, but it's not about watching a game, it's about biggest cup upset ever that you still remember and go, wow, I remember that.
Denmark winning the Euros.
Denmark winning the Euros on the beach.
Hazeltine. Ryder Cup.
Yes, there we go.
When they came back.
Yep, good, excellent.
What's wrong with that?
Well, it's golf. Frank?
Of course it's golf.
Coca-Cola Cup.
Coca-Cola Cup. Right.
Horrible.
That seems the perfect way to end today's show. We will be back tomorrow for more.
Dear God, I hope.
Are you on for the rest of the week?
I sincerely hope there's a long period of.
Oh, I hope there's a lot of blanks next to your name and the schedule.
Well,
That's it. Be sure to join us tomorrow.
Bye bye.
Is it your power ranking tomorrow?
Is it?
I don't know, is it?
I don't know.
Good.
Excellent. That's tomorrow.
Rumbelow's Cup.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.